A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 221. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, or British horror-related television this time, because this time we are continuing our discussion of Dracula from the Mystery and Imagination series from the late 1960s. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So this is a 90-minute adaptation of Dracula from 1968 in black and white for the ITV series Mystery and Imagination, which did a number of these sort of telefilms of classic gothic horror and classic ghost stories as well.
Yes, that's right. They like to do a bit of gothic. We've previously talked about a very good production of Frankenstein, which actually was the episode the week before Dracula. We talked about that last year on British Invaders. So now we turn our attention to Denham Elliott, a notable English actor, and his version of this venerable and villainous vampire.
Yes, and this is a take on Dracula that is fairly close to the book. They took a few shortcuts in order to fit it into a 90-minute studio production, but it is much more related to the book than it is to the familiar horror films from Universal and Hammer Studios. So we do have this high society type of vampire, with Denham Elliott playing a suave and charming version of the Count, very much from the novel, and not the sort of hissing version or the version with very little dialogue that we see in the later Hammer horror films or some of the various horror takes on Dracula. He appears for the first time playing piano in this sort of very dignified character who says that he has sensitive skin and sensitive eyes, so he stays up mostly at night and sleeps during the day and wears these dark glasses to avoid the bright lights, as this sort of well-dressed and elegant type of character who is Count Dracula.
Who, not surprisingly with that description, charms the lady of Dr. Seward's household, and in particular young Lucy Weston, who is the character he's most interested. And soon he is, we have to say, paying more than his respects in a series of sinister nighttime visits to bedrooms. And I've mentioned it briefly in our last episode. This is quite a sexy production for a 1968 television show, which I presume went out after 9 o'clock in the evening. We talked about it a little bit last time, Brian.
Yes, that's right. There is always something of a sexual association with vampires, and you know, there's very much the exchange of blood is something that is referenced here. But when you see the characters holding each other and the sort of lustful looks at the neck of Lucy Weston and so on, the references being made, I think, are pretty clear.
Yes, that's right. Lucy's reactions when Dracula feasts on her neck are quite clearly she is ecstatic about it all. And I found it an interesting but also perhaps slightly disturbing parallel for the actress Susan George, who in a couple of years' time would go on to appear in some very controversial scenes in Sam Peckinpah's film Straw Dogs, which came out 3 years after this Dracula. And some of the discussion and controversy about her reactions in scenes in that, well, you could almost see an early version of them here when Denham Elliott bites her neck.
Oh, yes, of course. Very interesting. And we have the flashback to Jonathan Harker, brief flashback with Jonathan Harker in Count Dracula's castle, being stalked by these vampire women, the three vampire women. And again, it's fairly clear what's going on there.
And they're not wearing very many clothes, it would appear, Brian.
That's true. They do, to a certain extent, as we say, go there. And in a way that was interesting and a little unexpected for this 1960s production. I do think it was all done quite well, including, as you say, Lucy's reaction when she's bitten.
So, this is a television version of Dracula from 1968. As far as we can tell, it's the first television reasonably faithful adaptation of the novel Dracula. The character Dracula, we know, has appeared on television before this, but as a sort of character in other shows. So we know for a fact that there was a version of Dracula that appeared in Doctor Who, The Chase, in 1965, I believe that was, Brian.
Yes, that was very much in passing, and it was like a funfair attraction robot that was built to look like Dracula. It was that sort of thing. So it wasn't quite the character appearing in Doctor Who, but it certainly was making the reference to Dracula there.
And I wouldn't be surprised to hear that there might have been similar appearances in American television shows, although I don't find any on the Wikipedia page. But if you know of earlier versions of Dracula on the small screen, do please let me know on the Facebook group.
Yes, and as always, it's interesting to see the approach where they're going to the books rather than the previous films and the sort of legend that arises in these kinds of things. The BBC also did their own faithful adaptation that was well received in 1977 with Louis Jordan playing Count Dracula and Frank Finlay as Van Helsing. So that was one that received some acclaim and is at this point better known than this version from the 60s for sure.
Yes, I haven't seen it since it came out, but I do remember it being very sort of thrilling stuff to have on BBC television at the time.
Yes, we may yet cover that on British Invaders. We'll see. And more recently, we get a lot of vampire-type things with the likes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the 90s and a variety of things on film and television. We covered Ultraviolet, the Channel 4 series from 1998 with the Code Vs, who were never referred to as vampires, but that was clearly the intention. We looked at that back in British Invaders 78 and 79. At that point, in the 90s and beyond, there were certainly a large number of vampire shows and films coming out, including takes on Dracula himself.
Yes, you couldn't move for vampires for a while, what with Twilight and everything, and the influence of True Blood and other shows like that. So we have to consider this particular 1968 television production from ITV, a 90-minute version, and we're looking at the good and the bad, the bits that stood out to us for the right and the wrong reasons. How would you like to start, Brian? What would you find something most positive about this production?
Well, I don't usually start with this, but I will have to say the direction in this is very good indeed. The direction and at times the music had a sort of Hitchcock-influenced feel to it, where they would go for odd angles and odd shots and very tense music with lots of strings in it that gave a quite intense feel at times. And I thought that was very well used. And it was really nice to see it in this 90-minute television production from the 60s. You don't usually see things that are quite as refined and stylistic as you saw there. So I really enjoyed that.
Yes, it has a good sense of style. It has some interesting directorial moments. They do rather well with reducing it to just these few locations, which I think serves the television production very well indeed. And it's all very impressive for such a quick turnover for television in those days, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It was, I'm sure, done in many ways in that sort of multi-camera style where you didn't have a great deal of editing happening. It was done in a theatrical way you often had with this. But in this case, with all of these directorial choices and the odd angles and things, they did clearly combine some things that must have required a reasonable amount of film editing in there as well.
Yes. We've also mentioned how they emphasized the sort of sexy, erotic aspects of the novel. And, you know, that was clearly, this was the late 60s, so I presume that sort of stuff was more easily shown on television. So this is a very, quite a sexy version of The Count. And we should talk a little bit about the performances. Denham Elliott, as the central character, is, I think, excellent when he's the suave, sophisticated Count. I did wonder whether he's less scary once his teeth appear. You know, I think Christopher Lee's snarl probably beats him on that, Brian.
Well, that's probably true. And I can't help but notice that Denham Elliott does not have that much screen time in this. He does have a fair bit of screen time, but considering he is the pivotal character, it's not all that much screen time, which I think is actually a nice choice. And it fits very well with the original story and how they're adapting it. It sort of leaves us wanting more, and it leaves us really paying attention to him when he's there. And we only had sort of a few moments here and there when we actually see him baring his teeth and, you know, coming in for the kill, so to speak. But we have much more of him as either the suave character interacting with the other characters in England, or as sort of the mysterious character in the cape wandering around and sometimes having dialogue, sometimes not, but not actually getting into the stuff with the teeth. And I thought that worked quite well too. So all in all, I think he did a really nice job, and I liked how they didn't use what was already the stereotypical film style Dracula. They did something that was a little closer to the book.
Yes, I do like that they stuck to the book, or rather to this middle section, which they've chosen to concentrate on. So that works very well. As we've said, Elliot's very good as the charming Count. I think Corin Redgrave does a nice job as the poorly demented Jonathan Harker in an interesting role where he switches between sanity and insanity very quickly. So that's well done. And in fact, all of the performances, I don't think there's anything that stood out as being particularly awful or difficult in the performances. They're all very good.
Yes, the character of Lucy is a character where the actress just doesn't have that much to work with. It's sort of a character who is important by what happens to her and around her. And in this case, with Susan George taking the role, it was done very well. She did a lot with the fairly small amount she had to work with, and that really added to this production.
Yes, I think Susan George's role is to look sexy and be appealing to the vampire, and she does that pretty well. And as we say, her performance when she's actually bitten is interesting as well. So yeah, okay, good stuff. What about the bits of this production that didn't work quite so well? Should we comment on the budget and perhaps some of the sets?
Okay, there are clearly some limitations there. Why don't you take that in a bit more detail, Eamon?
Well, I mean, it's a television production, and it's done, as we've said, on an astonishingly fast turnaround. They've got studio sets, which I think, you know, do show their limitations at times, and there are clearly a couple of wobbly walls that you can probably see on the sort of sharp DVD version that we're watching at the moment. So perhaps they stand out more to us than to the television audience of 1968. But I would counter that with a couple of good special effects around the appearance and disappearance of Dracula himself. And of course, as we've mentioned last time, this rather spectacular shot of the dissolution of Dracula's face, which they achieved with this sort of acid on wax effect. And that works very well indeed, I thought, Brian, when we talked about that.
Yes, that was clearly the money shot, so to speak. That would have been the big shot that took more time and more money than the others. And it was well used. It was focal, and it was very memorable. The other types of effects, in many cases, were done in a stylistic type of way. So rather than trying to do something big and flashy for the appearance of Dracula, you just see a sort of shadowy bat flying in the room, and then the crossfade where the bat fades out and Denham Elliott's Dracula fades in. And I thought that was quite effective. It was very simple. It was not a big complicated effect, but it was used well. So I was perfectly satisfied to see things being done that way.
Okay, good stuff. We have to inevitably compare it slightly to the previous week's episode, Frankenstein, which, as we keep saying, we discussed last year on British Invaders. And I suppose the Dracula production doesn't have that central, rather clever idea of having the dual role for the creator and his creation that Ian Holm managed in Frankenstein. So it doesn't have that perhaps single unique selling point that the previous week's episode had, Brian.
It also doesn't have the title character who is central to everything and almost every scene, and, you know, becomes this sort of big performance of the dual role around which everything else rotates. And that worked really well to sell the Frankenstein production. And you had Ian Holm in the role who could really sell that. Where in this, you had a very good performance by Denham Elliott as Count Dracula. And again, they did something where they went to the descriptions in the book and didn't so much go to what had already been established in film for the previous few decades.
Yes, that's right. They've done something, as you say, slightly more interesting with it by returning him to his sort of source material.
Yeah, I think for the type of thing they were doing, Frankenstein just gave them something more interesting to work with for that type of production than Dracula did. So it is one that I enjoyed more than this one, but for a 1960s sort of drawing very much on the original novel production of Dracula, this one did very well.
Okay, splendid. Anything else you want to mention in the good or bad columns about this production?
I don't think so. I think it's a very interesting production.
Okay, so if we didn't sell our listeners on the box set of Mystery and Imagination after discussing Frankenstein last year, can we convince them that this is the right time to buy it for this particular production? Or if they've watched Frankenstein but haven't got around to seeing Dracula, should we now encourage them to do so, Brian?
Well, I'll say yes. I would definitely recommend this one. It is a nice production of Dracula that very nicely avoids the sort of stereotypes that had already developed of the slightly over the top, or sometimes more than slightly over the top, version of Dracula. This is different from that, and it was very well done with some good performances. So it's definitely a recommendation from me on Dracula and also on the Mystery and Imagination DVD set, because there are some lovely productions there. And they're ones that you don't see very often and don't hear about too much. So it's really nice to have them collected here.
Yes, I think we are very lucky to have this box set from Network DVD. So congratulations and thanks to them yet again. And I'm going to agree with you, Brian. I think this is double thumbs up. I enjoyed Dracula. It's perhaps not the most scary production you'll ever see, but they do some interesting stuff in the 90 minutes. And I think it serves as a perfect companion piece to Frankenstein from the week before. And the box set itself, keep your eye on it, because it's coming down in price on Amazon. And it's got some other interesting bits and pieces on there that, who knows, we may get to. Who knows, I might be watching Freddy Jones as the demented demon barber Sweeney Todd as part of my build-up to Halloween this October. So there's some good stuff on there. Do have a look at the box set on Amazon and see what you think about maybe adding it to your wish list, because we like the two stories we've seen so far, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There is also a lovely turn in that by Lucy Fleming. Years before, she was one of the stars of Survivors in the 70s. She was one of the central characters in Uncle Silas in Mystery and Imagination. So that was another neat one to see in there. So there's lots of neat stuff on this DVD set.
And if you've bought the DVD set after listening to either of our reviews, do please get in touch, tell us what you think, and perhaps point out what the other little gems on the set to look at would be. Come along to the Facebook group and join in the fun.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, Dracula was one of the episodes of Mystery and Imagination, a 1960s ITV series that adapted a variety of novels and short stories in the, generally speaking, horror and ghost story genres. And they would tend to do fairly faithful to the novel or short story type of productions. They would work with the source material and generally not the other adaptations and sort of later genre legends that occur from things like Dracula and Frankenstein. This particular one worked with the middle section of the Dracula novel, featuring Count Dracula in English society dealing with characters like Dr. Sewell and the reappearance of Jonathan Harker and the reactions of Mina Harker and, of course, young Lucy Weston and the interaction where she, of course, falls for Dracula, and there is the central moment of her being bitten by Count Dracula himself, along with, of course, Van Helsing appearing and the hunt for Dracula. So you have lots of these interesting elements of the original novel in this 90-minute black-and-white production.
Lovely stuff. And, of course, do come back and join us next time for some more interesting stuff. We're looking at a fairly recent DVD release from the British Film Institute and exploring the world of television for schools, which I don't think we've done before at all. And we're looking at The Boy from Space, a series that was originally shown on BBC in 1971, but it's had other broadcasts, which we'll mention next time.
Absolutely. And if you're not familiar with the idea of television for schools from the BBC in years past, this will be an interesting one to listen to, because there were some interesting things that were done in their approach and how television for educational purposes was done at that time. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group where we have plenty of interesting discussions happening there.
Yes, join in the fun at Facebook, or come and listen to us and several other geek-related shows on the Voice of Geeks Network, at streaming internet radio at vognetwork.com, British Invaders Mondays and Tuesdays, several other shows to join in with, and a community to join as well. So do come along and check out at least some of the fun at vognetwork.com.
Yes, absolutely. Please do. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
And until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, ah, the podcast children of the night. What sweet music they make.